Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am the net control operator and host of the Limark Technical Net. This has been going on since 1982, with the host being Dick, K2RIW, and continues to this day. It's here every Sunday night at 8 p.m. And let me remind you of a couple little things before we start the show tonight. Okay, as always, if you have any questions and you can't reach the network via radio, you can use email. If you have any topics you would like to hear discussed, or if you have any puzzles you'd like to share that I could offer the rest of the participants, or if you want me to tap Paul, WS2N, on the shoulder and ask him his opinion of some YouTube video or web page or news announcement about space. The email address to get both of us is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. There are links to some stories. I already have a couple of links to some interesting, very basic YouTubes on the concept of impedance. Just something to take a look at. It shouldn't be new to any of you guys, passing your licenses and all, but it's available, and it's on roy.ac2gs.com. You just type that into your browser, and you'll get my link page. Again, roy.ac2gs.com. And if I tell you any other articles or stories that have source material, I will issue the link pages for that on that page. There is a chat room available. You can just type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll take you to our chat room. And as always, I stream this on the internet. If you type on a browser, if you don't have access to the audio feed for one reason or another, you can always type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll take you to a page where the audio stream will be heard. So you have that too. And as always, Mike KC2NJI is kind enough to maintain his website, which is amateurradio.tv, where he has archives of the Technical Net going as far back as 2006, September 2006. So that's the usual stuff. Also, we are fortunate to have Andy, WA2CDL, with Andy's Corner. That'll be coming up a little bit later in this hour. He's going to be continuing on the subject of decibels and some discussion of signal strength meters, so that should be interesting. But before that, let me take a list. We'll ask people, as we always do, to give us their name and their call sign if they have a question or a topic. And we'll try our best to consider it and bounce it around and discuss it with everyone listening. And if we have too many, we'll pause it for a little while to do Andy's Corner. So please, if you have a question or a topic tonight, give me your call sign and your first name.
Enter HCN with Simple Puzzle.
Okay, West recognized. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list tonight? Give me your first name and your call sign.
52 Bravo Zulu, Rich.
Rich recognized. Anyone else want to put their name on the list tonight? Okay, well, we'll start with the short list that we have, and we'll see what develops. Sometimes people come up a little bit late for the Technical Net. I understand that. So, Wesley, you have a puzzle, you say?
Very simple one. What are the components of impedance? And the second one is, in serious resonance, how the capacitive and inductive reactances behave, and what is left if you have resonance. Network share.
Okay. Impedance, I assume by definition, is the combination of two qualities, reactance and resistance. Resistance being the impeding of current, is dealing with a direct current or any current. Reactance, though, is impeding a current by as a function of frequency by phase shifting either the current or the voltage. So that would be the definition of the two components. They add up the same way that a Pythagorean theorem hypotenuse does. The square of the voltage plus the square of the reactance equals the square of the total impedance. The capacitive reactance is considered negative. The inductive reactance is considered positive. So in your case where you have a series of a capacitor and an inductor, you add up the positive inductive reactance by the negative capacitive reactance. At resonance, both of those have the exact same reactance, and so they both cancel out, and all you're left with is some losses, and for the most part, the resistance of the circuit.
Excellent. Which of the reactive components is linear and which one is not?
Okay, well, the problem is that one is the inverse of the other. So the one that's linear is you know, X, and the one that's nonlinear is 1 over X. I don't exactly remember, unfortunately. I would say that the nonlinear is inductive, but I could be totally wrong.
And yes, you are totally wrong. Kunova.
Well, by, you know, if it's not inductive, then it's capacitance, because again, they're inversely related. So one gives you a curve that's X, and the other gives you a curve that's 1 over X.
Inductive reactance is linear, capacitive reactance is not.
Okay, but that's the reason why. One is the inverse operation of the other. So Y equals X gives you basically a diagonal line. Y equals 1 over X gives you asymptotes at Y and X axes. It never really reaches that point. So that's why that's nonlinear.
If you have a series resonance and you have a curve of inductive reactance and capacitive reactance, and both of them, they have their own maximums or minimums, at which point the resonance happens?
For a series circuit, it's not either the maximum or the minimum. It's when both of them are equal to each other and they cancel each other out. Inductors and capacitors have everything from a zero to 100% as far as conducting a current. That they have a, you know, zero to infinity impedance, if you will. For an inductor, at zero hertz, an inductor has zero impedance. At an infinitely high frequency, it has an infinite impedance. And capacitors work the exact opposite way. At DC, as we all sort of know, that for all intents and purposes, capacitors have an infinite impedance, and as you bring the frequency up, the impedance drops forever and forever and ever.
Excellent. The only what I didn't hear is at what point the two cancels each other. Would that be at their maximum or minimum, or at any other point?
it would be at another point. Again, if you drew the curve, the intersection of that diagonal for inductance and the curve for the capacitance has an intersect point.
Excellent. I rest my case. Thank you.
Okay, Wesley. Anyone with any comments before we move on to Rich? Okay, Rich, W2BZ, what's your question or your topic for tonight?
Well, it's exactly the opposite of what you were just talking about. It has to do with ham radio etiquette. It's Sunday, so it must be W2BC has a question about DMR or digital. I am still confused on when you're using a talk group, whether it's through a hotspot or through a repeater, when you're over... here are some people on worldwide having... two shows that go 20 minutes long. I have some that, I've heard some that go 5 minutes long, and that said, you know, we better sign 73s, we're taking too much time. I still don't know what, because there's no other experience I have, whether on HF or DHF or whatever, where time is of the essence, or time is something that needs to be considered when you're in a Q-cell. So go ahead, Roy. I don't know if there's a definite answer, but there's got to be something. Okay. 73, listen to me. Okay, that's the question.
Okay, far from me to be the Miss Manners of ham radio. I think it's a lot like repeaters. It's considered bad taste to take up a repeater with a conversation between two people for an extended period of time. But it sort of depends upon the activity of the repeater, if it's very active versus not terribly active, and what time of the day it is, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, as opposed to morning or afternoon, evening drive time. So it's a very fluid thing. When you're talking about the worldwide talk group, it's a very popular, very well-known talk group. So people are probably a little bit more sensitive not to hog that talk group, as opposed to if you were hooked in to, say, Scottish talk group. I mean, I don't know how active, but I've listened to it. It's not terribly active, so probably the participants are not that aware of taking up too much time. So it's sort of a fluid thing, and it also depends upon your personality. You know, some people are not really interested in other people's problems, so they'll hog a channel, but other people aren't that way. And then there's also sometimes, I think, they use it as an excuse when they no longer have anything particularly useful to say to the other person. Rather than saying, I'm bored, they say, well, let's stop now and give opportunities to other people to use this talk group.
So why don't you... I hear it very rarely. Why don't you hear it more that somebody says, let's QSY to some, you know, obscure talk group? I don't think I've ever heard that. You know, talk group 29,344. Let's QSY up there, then nobody's going to bother us. How come I'm not hearing that? Go ahead.
Well, probably is the frequency of people doing that and random happenstance. I'll have you know, I mean, it's a little bit weird, but I heard someone just today say that on Worldwide 91, where he was talking for a couple of minutes, and it was obvious that it was an old friend of his, and he kind of said, let's QSY to, I forget the talk group that he chose. And the other guy said, okay, yeah, sure, whatever. And then so they were gone. So, yeah, it's not incredibly common. It's probably the first time I've noticed that in a couple of weeks, but, you know, it has been known to happen. Again, it sort of depends on a whole bunch of things. For the most part, guys, unless they have a very good relationship with the other guy, they usually, in what I've seen, don't really take it to another talk group. They just kind of run through 5 minutes of pleasantries and they wish them well and cite the fact that they don't want to take up the talk group and arrivederci.
Each time I've been on DMR, I've heard more and more CUSOs, and I think DMR is leaning towards that direction because guys, you know, the propagation, everybody knows what's happening with propagation, and for some reason, the repeaters on VHF and UHF repeaters are mostly silent, and I'm hearing a lot of roundtables. I had a roundtable with some guy in the Highlands of Scotland, somebody was in Germany, somebody was in Illinois, and me, I forgot what the subject was, but we were talking something about ham radio, and it was quite a kick to have four guys from around the world talking about whatever we were talking about. So I think you're going to see that more and more rather than, you know, how does my audio sound or what's the weather. I may be wrong, but I think digital radio is going to move more towards talking like it used to be in the old days of AM and FM and in the old days of HF. Go ahead.
AC2GS. Well, I hope you're right, Rich. I tend to feel, though, that the majority of the way these things are working is, you know, how's my signal, or the story about the grandkid who brought them the hot spots, or something along those lines, or what they had for breakfast, what they had for lunch, how their prostate is, what have you. I tend to think that it's when two guys almost accidentally come up on a subject matter that interests listeners who then join the group and start doing round robin. Except, of course, when it comes to scheduled networks. Then you're kind of locked in to a rotating conversation. But I think it needs that seed of an interesting topic to entice other people. Otherwise, you get a very, you know, you get your usual generic 5-minute conversation between two people who wish each other well, and that's about it.
To UDU. Roy, I think he was drunk. He was at speed or something.
Okay. Rich, are you out there? Did we double with each other? Okay, I'm assuming every so often this happens with Rich's radios. They overheat and they have some little problems. So hopefully he'll come back to us as soon as he either cools off the radio or whatever is going wrong stops going wrong. I'll try one more time. Rich, are you out there and can you come back at me here? Okay, nothing heard. I hope nothing's problematic there, and hopefully he'll come back later in the TechNet. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy. I am the host of this, the Limar Technical Net. If anyone has any questions of a technical nature, any topics they want to bounce back and forth, please give me your first name and your call sign. Hello, Rich. You're a bit noisier. You're about 50% noise now. Well, I guess we lost your signal again. I don't know what to tell you. When you came back, you were about 50% noise. I can understand the words, but it's just 50% noise in the background. Okay, Rich, if that's you out there, all it is some random noise. There's no audio, and it even drops the repeater repeatedly. Okay, once again, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Limar Technical Net. If you have any technical questions or any topics you would like to discuss tonight, while we wait for Rich to kind of get the rig under control, please give me your first name and your call sign.
KC2FNR. My name is Scott.
Hello, Scott. What can I do for you tonight?
Good evening, Roy. I have a friend who's lived in the area and has listened to the TechNet for years. He's retired and moved away, and he'd like to listen to the net. I gave him the website that you mentioned at the beginning of the net, and we were having some trouble, but I believe he said it's now working. But when I go to the website, I hit the play button, and it just says error, and I'm not getting the net. What am I doing wrong?
Okay, when you say you go to the website, this could mean many things. Which website are you going to?
I'm sorry. The one at the beginning of the show, so TechNet at AC2GS, and then I went to Net, and I went down to where it said if you want to listen in, and in the center of the page there was a play symbol, and it also said error. I hit the play, and the play symbol went away, and I had no sound.
Okay, that doesn't sound like my webpage, so I'm not exactly sure where you are. What sometimes happens, unfortunately, Limark has their own place to listen to the stream of the repeater, which is really sending you where I think you've gone, which is, what is it, W2LIE.net. That connection hasn't been active in over a year and a half. If you typed in technet.ac2gs.com, you get redirected to an address that says kc2rc.ddns.net 800 stream, but you don't have to worry about that. That's just what shows up. And all you have is a single gadget in the middle of the screen with a pause button. You unpause it, and you get the audio stream.
Okay, Roy, I'll try that again. And yes, I looked at the website that I'm on, and it does say w2lie.net. So I need to get to the other one. So I'll give that a try. Thank you very much, KC2FNR.
You're welcome, Scott. Yeah, I noticed that repeatedly when I go to the LIMARC pages, and I'm always curious if that website has reconnected their stream, but I've been checking off and on for about a year and a half, and it's been down. Maybe I should talk to the president of the club about mentioning that or disabling that particular link. But as I tell everyone, you just have to type into your URL technet.ac2gs.com, and it should take you exactly to the right page. Anyway, once again, this is AC2GS. If anyone has any questions or topics they would like to discuss tonight, please give me your first name and your call sign. Okay, this is a perfect time to go to Andy's Corner. Andy, I hope you're out there and listening and ready to tell us about decibels.
Oh, yes. I have been listening and listening and listening. So here we go. It's 8:30. And good evening to Andy's Corner. That's me. My actual call, WA2, commercial driver's license, CDL. And eventually I'll understand all this stuff that I'm talking about. And we'll get into a routine. You know, it is summer, it's hot today, it's uncomfortable, and everybody's either swimming or staying in air-conditioned places. And staying away from people. So, a little recap, because I was trying to figure out where to start. I've been talking about decibels for the past few weeks, and I know it's an interesting subject, and it goes on and on and on. And we use decibels every day. We don't even realize it, because that's how our ears respond to a decibel value. Or I should say a logarithmic value. That's the way the air pressure. And I was reading this, you know, from articles that I've collected, and there's a thing called the sound pressure level, or SPL, which gives you a number, and it's actually in microbars, which is a standard threshold, you know, for being able to hear a sound. And it's actually in a decibel number, because it's a logarithmic number. But I'm trying to stay away from all the math, so please bear with me as I read all this stuff and try to convey the information. The thing I want to discuss tonight is mainly S meters, because both receivers have them. There are only a few receivers that actually don't have an S-meter. They were built that way. All the crafters came out with a couple of radios that don't have any S-meter on it at all. But most radios do. And I know most people look at an S-meter, and they don't know what they're looking at. They see a meter, and they see it move. But that's it. So this will give a little bit of clarity on what an S-meter is, and how it's interpreted as far as signal strength is concerned. So that's what I want to convey tonight. Let me let it drop. This is WA2CDO. I don't want to time it out. All right, so as you can see, I'm talking, but I'm also going to be reading from some pages here that I printed out. So I'll do both at the same time. And, again, I've been talking about decibel basics and use of decibels, the basic formulas, because, you know, basically a decibel is a ratio of two numbers. For instance, as an example, if you have an amplifier that you put on your transmitter, and you're putting into the amplifier 10 watts, and you see your amplifier is amplifying, and you measure your output power. So I'm going to say it again. You put the input power is 10 watts into the amp, and the output power is 100 watts, and that's 10 times. You know, you're amplifying 10 times, 10 times multiplication. That happens to be 10 dB. It just comes out that way because of the logarithmic numbers. So, if you look at the logarithmic the chart that they give you on logarithms, but I'm not looking to go into that because nobody's, very few people are going to have a calculator in front of them looking up different numbers, the log of a number. So, but basically that's it. And this article, by the way, I got out of January 2020, UST. Some other articles I got out of Wikipedia and some other places. So, there's a, there are a couple of formulas, and again, I want to stay away from formulas if I can. There's a little article on converting decibels to power ratios. And it's an actual formula. So if you give them, just as an example, again, if you give it a ratio in decibels and ask to calculate the power or voltage ratio, it's actually, it's 10 minus 1, actually it's dB divided by 10, for a power ratio. So basically, the decibel formula is 10 times the log of whatever the ratio is for power, and for voltage, it's 20 times the log. And that's because of power equals E squared or I squared in a power formula. You know, going back to Ohm's law.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Okay, just in my right, I'm listening to myself, so I'm not missing anything, but I'm going to have to keep it a little bit shorter. We have this, I guess the repeater is times out because of IRLP or Echolink or all those other additions that we have on our repeater system, because they have built-in timers that I guess we can't control. So we have to time out in order for that, prevent that from timing out. So I guess that's how we have it set up. So I'll have to just make sure to keep it shorter. All right, let me let it drop. All right, so in reading this article here, it just says, you know, there's voltage and current ratios. And it actually says it may seem confusing that the logarithm of voltage and current ratios are multiplied by 20 instead of 10. And again, first, decibels are always about power ratios. So don't think that there is a voltage decibel and a current decibel. Okay, that is different from a power decibel. A decibel is a decibel, which is a decibel. And that's what it says. So, you know, again, using the equations, power equals E squared divided by R and P equals I squared R, to substitute for the power values, you can see that the ratios inside the parentheses of the decibel equation become, it's E squared divided by E reference squared and I squared divided by I reference squared. And so it can be rewritten, rewritten as voltage divided by the voltage reference squared and current squared, I divided by I reference squared. Again, I want to stay away from all this, these formulas, because you gotta actually see it. But I just figured I'd mention it. Let me let the repeater drop. Any questions regarding that? Okay. I was hoping that WA2VDA, the VDA or VDH would be on, because he has some questions. And the article goes into decimal shortcuts, where you don't have to carry a calculator. And again, you got to visualize it, so I'm not gonna go into this particular paragraph. So, but I will mention, again, which I mentioned last week, decimals and power examples, because we've heard these terms before of, you know, how many, what is your half power point, which is always used. You know, if you increase, if you double your power, how many dB are you increasing? So the example of that is, let's suppose you have an amateur transmitter that has an output power of 10 watts, but you would like a little more power to contact a distant station. And there's an illustration which shows, after adjusting your transmitter, you measure the output power again, and you find that it's now generating 20 watts. So you went from 10 watts to 20 watts. You doubled your power. How many dB increase is that? And again, using the 10 watt signal as a reference, divide 20 by 10 to find the power ratio, because again, as I mentioned, it's a ratio. It's a ratio of 20 divided by 10, which is 2. And when you look up the log of 2, the log of 2 is 0.3. It just so happens that that's the log of 2, 0.3, and because it's 10 times 0.3, which is, becomes 0.3 times 10 is 3, so the increase is 3 dB, and that's for power. Every time you double your power, you're going to increase by 3 dB, and that's just a reference that I know, and we all have used many times. I say, okay, I got a 3 dB increase. So here's another example. Your adjustments increased the power of your signal by 3 dB. When the power is doubled, there's a 3 dB increase. That is true no matter what the actual power levels are. For example, increasing power from 50 to 100 is a ratio of 2. That's also a 3 dB increase. So now suppose you have an amplifier to increase your output power to 1,000. So now you choose the reference power to be 10 watts again, and divide the new power by the reference. So again, use 10 watt signal as the reference, divide...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Okay. Seems like the time is shorter this week for some reason than last week. I'm not sure why. All right. So you're not missing anything because I hear myself. You use the 10 watt signal as a reference, divide by 1,000 by 10 to find the power ratio of 1,000 divided by 10, which is 100. Okay, find the logarithm of the power ratio to get the log of 100, which is now 2. Multiply this by 10. Because it's 10 times the log, and now you get 20 dB. So the amplifier now has increased the power of your signal by 20 decibels. See, you did not double the power. You increased it by 10 times. So now you get a 20 dB increase. Actually, you used it 10 watts. Oh, not 10 times. 10 times 10, you'd be by... it's 1,000 watts, so I didn't mean to say 10 times, because 10 times 10 is 100. So, you get 20 dB increase by going from 10 watts to 1,000 watts. Let me just check here, because there's another paragraph in regard to this. Let me let it drop so I don't time it out. Whenever you multiply or divide the reference power by a factor of 2, you will have a 3 dB change in power. You might guess then, if you multiply the power by 4, it would be a 60 dB increase. If you multiply the power by 8, it would be a 9 dB increase. And that's true. And that's the way that, because of the logarithmic value and the multiplication. So, those are some examples, and it goes on to more examples, but it gets a little bit, visualize some of the numbers that I'm giving. The last thing I want to mention about this, which is interesting, and a lot of people don't know, is of what percentage of power is lost with a certain decibel level. So I'm going to just go into that a little bit. Let me let it drop. All right, W8-CDL, this is Andy's Corner. Converting decibels to percentage. Sometimes we need to know percentage instead of a decibel value. So again, here are the formulas to make those conversions. First, you got to calculate the decibel equivalent of a power or voltage percentage. And again, it's 10 times the log of your percentage, this time it's percentage power divided by 100% for power, or 20 times the log for voltage. Again, percentage voltage divided by 100. So this is interesting. And to convert from percentages to decibels, you take your power, percentage power equals 100% times the log of dB divided by 10. It's actually log minus 1, so negative log. If I'm saying that right, percentage voltage is say the same thing, 100 times the log of dB divided by 20. So the interesting thing about this is, here's a practical application, and this is important. Let me let it drop. Suppose you are using an antenna feed line that has a loss of just 1 dB. You can calculate the amount of transmitter power that is actually reaching your antenna and how much is lost in the feed line. So it turns out percentage of power equals 100% times the log, as I mentioned in the formula, minus 1 divided by 10, equals 100% times the log of 0.1. It's actually minus 0.1, which happens to come out to, and this is the hard part to understand, 79.4%. So you actually lose, what it means is that 79.4% of your power is reaching the antenna, and 20% is lost in the feed line. So think about that. With a 1 dB loss, just 1 dB, you're losing 20% of your power. How many people do that? Well, I'll give it to you for any comment to what I said, because that's interesting. You know, you would think that, people say, I got a 1 dB loss, big deal. I got news for you, 20% of your power. What do you think of that, Roy?
Well, that's curious. 1%, 1 decibel is basically 10 to 0.1. Is that 20%? Because 3 decibels is 50%, I guess logarithmically speaking, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, a lot of times people overestimate and underestimate decibel loss. There's a lot of people out there who think nothing of putting RG58 cable on long lengths of 70 centimeter line, and they don't really understand the incredible amount of wasted energy that's being used up in their coax.
Yeah, and as a footnote, I want to mention, by the way, that if you look at the specifications for coax cable, it's usually rated in losses in dB per foot, or per 100 feet, or per 1,000 feet. or whatever it is. So if you know what your losses are, then you'll know how much power is coming at the other end of the cable. So, and coax cables are specified. So just like you said, you know, RG58, you're going to get a lot of loss. There's quite a few dBs of loss in short lengths of RG58 as opposed to LMR400. So you got to take that. It's a good thing to take into consideration when you're putting up an antenna. You know, use a feed line that would give you the most efficiency and the most power to the antenna. And by the way, there's another footnote to that. Let me let it drop. It's interesting when you measure SWR in the shack, how feed line losses can throw off the readings. This I know for a fact because I was playing around. I was doing some experiments. I wanted to see. So, if you have a high SWR or a reflected wave or return loss, whatever you want to call it, is measured with an SWR meter. And if you put your SWR meter at your transmitter in the shack, let's say your antenna is 100 feet away or 200 feet away, and you got 200 feet of a feed line going to the antenna. Well, you know, the losses of the feed line back, your actual SWR reading is now changed because it's attenuated in the cable. So the actual level, the number of your SWR reading would be different as opposed to measuring it at the antenna itself. So you can have a feed line that has enough losses. If your SWR is low, your reflected voltage is going to be low, reflected power is going to be low, and if the because it's low in the first place, and if you have a high feed line loss, you're never going to see it because it's low in the first place. So you think that your SWR is low, but not really, because it's being attenuated in the cable. So, you know, tell me if that makes sense. That's been proven. So, Roy, I'll give it back to you for any comments on that, if anybody else have any comments. Have you ever run into that situation where you've seen, you have a low SWR, but it's not really true because your feed line is giving you a lot of losses? Back to you, Roy.
I have a comment.
Okay, one sec, Wes. Thankfully, I haven't had it myself. I've read a lot about it. It comes from, again, one of those things that you make an assumption that isn't correct. In those types of standing wave ratio devices, you're measuring the forward power at the side of your shack with the reverse power coming back to your shack. And that's assuming that the reverse current isn't being attenuated where it really is. And so under severe cases where the attenuation is great, it reads very little reverse power and adds 2 and 2 together and comes up with 22 and tells you that you have a perfect one-to-one visual. So yeah, I've read about it a lot, and it's quite understandable. It's the nature of the most common method that people build standing wave ratio and watt meters into. I guess, Wesley, you wanted to say something also on this?
I have a problem with Andy's explanation. In the true sense of the word, SWR is constant along the entire length of the cable. However, since attenuation does play a role in what the RSWR reading is, not what the SWR actually is. The longer length of the cable will produce reduce SWR and the transmitter at the transmitter end. My problem that I have is attenuation has nothing to do with SWR at all, absolutely excluded. And to XGN.
WA2VDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
One of the best ways, sort of an analogy to think about line loss at SWR is those garden drip hoses, you know, where they leak out all along the length of the hose. You can have the far end of the hose capped up, which is almost like a perfect short circuit, and you hook it up to your faucet, and then the water, turn on the water, and it just runs fine because it's leaking out all along the way. So when you have, say, a high SWR antenna and a lot of line loss, what's happening is the power going down is getting attenuated. Some is getting reflected, and what comes back is getting attenuated. So when you measure it at the driving end, everything looks pretty good, but at the load, the SWR could be terrible. So it's because you're losing down and back. The SWR at the sending end can look a lot better than it really is. Go ahead.
Yeah, let me just add to that. Hello, John?
Yeah.
Yeah, what Wesley said was true, by the way. One thing has nothing to do with the other. But because if you have an SWR of, let's say, any number, you have some reflected power, whatever it is, and your feed line loss is high, there's a possibility you're never going to see it because it's attenuated in that feed line loss. So it's not going to change the SWR, it's not going to affect the SWR, it'll just give you a false reading. You think that your SWR is low because, I got no reflected power. You have no idea how much power is going to the antenna, because you can't measure your feed line loss in your shaft. You're just measuring your forward power. So you see your forward power. What reaches the antenna is whatever the attenuation is of the cable. And what's reflected back is also, on the return trip, that same attenuation. But you may never see it. Because if the reflected power is very low in the first place, it just may be so low you're not going to see it. And if it is substantial, it's going to be attenuated, so it's going to look better than it is. You're going to say, oh, my SWR is low. Yeah, I got some reflected power. It's low, but it's really a lot higher because of the attenuation. John, does that make sense the way I explained it?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It can give you a false sense of security. What will happen in the wintertime if you're coax is covered with snow, you fire up the transmitter, if your SWR at the antenna is bad, all the snow melts off your coax because all of your power is warming up the coax as you lose it down and lose it back. So yeah, things can look good, but you get the false idea that it's getting to the antenna, and it's not. It's being lost down and back or on your feed line. You can see it on the Smith chart too, because when you draw the sending end circle and the load circle, at the load it'll be a very big circle, but when you close down by the line loss, you see a much smaller circle with a much smaller SWR. So it gives you a false sense of security. Hi.
Well, again, I have a problem with it. See, let's take a receiver so we could understand better. Because if you have a ratio the same, but it's lower in value because of attenuation, that ratio is exactly the indication of your SWR. But let me go to the receiver. There is no relationship between SWR and receive performance. There is one condition for the simplification to be true. The received direct noise floor must be above your receiver noise floor. Beyond that, anything you might do to increase the output from the antenna does nothing to increase the signal to noise ratio, which is a better measure of received performance. So if you hear, if you have a quite not bad SWR, but you hear the signal bad, it's because of the attenuation, but the ratio is exactly the same. I mean, ratio of SWR, not ratio of signal to noise, and to XGN, because noise level is exactly the same. The only difference is how strong is the signal, and to XGN.
Alright, let me get to CDL. Let me just make sure I have it. Okay, well actually, I think you're getting a little bit off the track. We're basically talking about decibels and line losses, and I know you're talking about receivers and noise floor and everything else. That's a separate issue. What the receiver sees, you know, granted the antenna that is connected to receiver should be resonant. And usually, some receivers, there's actually a little capacitor that it's called antenna trimming. It's a trimming cap. So it peaks up. It matches the impedance of the receiver to the antenna that you're connecting to it. And, you know, on HF, because of atmospheric noises, you know, you'll hear a noise increase, which gives you an indication that, you know, that your receiver is receiving. But as far as the you know, minimum discernible signal, signal to noise ratio, and phase noise, and everything else, those are receiver specifications and properties of the receiver itself. But as far as you know, dB, because I'm sticking to dBs, and as far as losses are concerned, this is what I'm trying to convey as far as looking at your power being coming, you know, reflected power coming back, which again, you know, as John just mentioned, it gives you a false reading. You don't really know. I like, personally, let me let it drop again. Okay, sorry, I keep saying let me let it drop so people know. I like to actually measure my power at the antenna end. Then I know exactly what my losses are. So if I'm putting out 100 watts in the shack and I see 60 watts into the antenna, I'll say, okay, I got, I'm losing 40 watts. So, you know, that would give me that indication. So, at that point. Alright, I want to change, it's 9 o'clock, I want to change the subject to S meters because that was something that I wanted to speak about. So, one more, before I do that, any other questions in regarding to decibels and the actual losses and so on? There's a lot more reading you guys could do. If you look up January 2020 QST CD article, there's actually another article following that was written by Rohde from Rohde and Schwartz and N1UL. And he talks about HF antenna performance, and also refers to decibel levels, and you know, and the accuracy of S meters, which also is an interesting thing because how many receivers have actually an S meter that's accurate? So I'll just mention the article on S meters, and we'll go from there. Before I do, any other questions regarding what we just spoke about?
WHYY, good evening. With a comment.
And then to XGN with a comment.
Okay, we got Joe or YY, and we got Leslie again. Okay. Joe, you're first. Go ahead.
Good evening, Andy, WHYY. I've been listening for just a couple of minutes here, but if you think about what you said, it is important about looking at decibel losses, but think about this, with what you said. If you have a transmission line that had one decibel of loss in it into a perfect antenna system, or one decibel of loss in a perfect antenna system, or you had a perfect antenna system with a transmission line of 1 decibel of loss, wouldn't your radiated signal level and field strength out in the air still be the same?
Wait, say that again. With see, I guess one thing has nothing to do with the other, because loss is a loss, antenna gain is antenna gain.